Welcome to Real World Rewind. This show marks our first quote-unquote normal episode. In the previous show, we took some time to introduce you to Real World Rewind and tell you what the show would be like, so go check out that episode for more information. On today's show, however, we're kicking off a series on Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings films. Today we're going to be talking about Fellowship of the Ring in particular, but we'll discuss the impact of the series as a whole too. Before we get started, however, I'd like to give you a little bit of background information on the film. It's obviously based on a book by J.R.R. Tolkien, or a set of books. It was released in 2001, and directed, of course, by Peter Jackson. Now, Fellowship of the Ring, and really the Lord of the Rings trilogy as a whole, is somewhat revolutionary in the way it was made, because these three movies were shot at the same time. And that was a really uncommon thing to happen when Peter Jackson went about to make those movies. You didn't really see studios bankrolling three huge movies like this at the same time. So it's certainly a landmark film for that reason, and for many others that I'm sure we'll talk about. Joining me today on the show, we're going to have Real World Theology's very own Elrond Mikey Fizzle.
Woo! Thanks for coming to the show, Blaine.
Okay, so without further ado, we're going to jump right into our main segment and talk about Fellowship of the Ring. So, Mikey, I'd like to know a little bit more about your personal history with Fellowship of the Ring and maybe these movies in general. Maybe, like, when did you first see them? What was your initial reaction? Things like that.
Well, especially with Fellowship specifically, it all started because we were both at a friend of a mutual friend's party, and someone introduced us, and I was kind of like, oh, I think Fellowship's kind of cute. And, you know, I got Fellowship's number, we called, we talked, but it didn't last that long, because then her friend, you know, Two Towers came along, and I immediately lost interest, as most people would, sadly, for Fellowship of the Ring. But I say all that to say, actually, so I was introduced to these films in college. It was great. At the time in college, I was just starting to get back into film and some of my other hobbies that I had kind of put on the back burner for a while, because at some point after my freshman year, I decided that college was about being with people all the time, and I just had loved it. And occasionally we watch films and stuff like that, but for the most part, I was just with people, having conversations, staying up super late. It's when I stopped paying attention to, like, football and going to the movies and reading comics and all these other things that I had enjoyed doing for many years. And so by the time Lord of the Rings started with Fellowship, it was about that time where I started pushing community with my love of film, and we would have 25 or so people crammed in my tiny, tiny apartment living room, watching, like, because we go at midnight to buy the extended edition of Fellowship of the Ring, and we'd all watch it the next day. And it was crazy. And it was one of the first times I'd used a film to build community. And so that was great. And with the Lord of the Rings in general, they'll always have a special place in my heart. Not just because I love them, but because I think Return of the King was one of my wife and I's first dates. You know, and especially with, like, the Arwen Aragorn love angle, you know, that was kind of helpful because it really mirrored our relationship. Obviously, with me identifying as the pursuing Arwen and my wife, the heroic Aragorn. So,
very nice. Very nice. Yeah, and I remember you talked before about how Star Wars taught you romance, and it seems like Lord of the Rings was pretty influential there too.
So. Just another piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. No, I'm really glad you brought up the idea of community, and I don't know if this is something about Fellowship and about these movies with our age group in particular, or people in our age group, or if it's just something about the movies as a whole, but these movies meant a lot to me as far as community goes too. I guess by the time this movie came out, Fellowship came out in 2001, so I was 10 or 11 years old then. I guess, Mikey, you were in college,
My gosh.
I know. but I wasn't really old enough to have read the books. you know, before they came out. But I remember my dad always talking about them when I was little, and he loved them, and he was super excited about it. Well, my parents divorced when I was really little, and so I didn't live with my dad at the time these movies came out. But one of the things we did for Fellowship, and actually for all three of these movies, is we went to see them together in the theater. So, and my dad has passed away now. He died when I was 17. So these movies are really special to me because I every time I watch these movies, I think about spending time with my dad in the theater watching these movies, and I think about his love for them and him pushing me toward reading the books. And I think the only reason that I love epic high fantasy stories like this is because of my dad. So they have, I have a pretty deep personal connection to them, aside from the fact that they're just really great, really fun movies. And I don't know, I think there's something about these movies that, that sort of draws people together.
That's so crazy that you mentioned that, because that for whatever reason, it's one of the movies that are, well, the trilogy, all of the movies, especially Fellowship, just seem to be one of those movies where like everyone can get into it. Like there's so few movies that deal with such a sprawling set of characters and, you know, story and locations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that and fantasy that like all ages can get into. It's almost, it's very much like Star Wars, like you mentioned. I remember in college we got to see Fellowship of the Ring with a friend that I was in a band with, and it became like an inside joke that anytime we were going to go to band practice, we would say like come, let us hunt orc, you know, and we would you know, that was our thing for band practice. And not to make this story take a sad turn, but similarly, that was one of the best experiences that we had, something we shared. And he, you know, the movie came out at Christmas, and he passed away due to an accident that February. So Fellowship is the only one I got to experience with him, and he was a big part of my life at the time. And so every time I watch Fellowship, I think about my friend. And anytime there's, you know, that line right there at the end, I almost get choked up because they're not only are the characters so impassioned about their mission, but, you know, it reminds me of something that I guess much like, you know, you remembering these great times with your dad, there's this community aspect to it that it fosters. It's one of the few movies that I know, like Laura comes from a huge family. You know, there's like 10 brothers and sisters, and it's one of the only movies that they go as a family to watch, where they sit down as a family to watch, because everybody likes it. And I think that's saying something.
Yeah, definitely. I remember even when the extended editions came out, I like how you mentioned it, I went out there the day it released too and got it. Actually, it's a funny story. I didn't think initially the lady at the cash register where I got them was going to let me check it out, because it was so expensive then. I think it was like, you know, 80, 90 bucks, somewhere in that range. And she told me when I got to the checkout line, she's like, oh, no, 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 honey. We've got these on DVD over here. They're a lot cheaper. You know, it wasn't the extended edition or anything like that. She's like, you need to just get these. And I was like, no, this is what I want.
Yeah, trust me.
Yeah, definitely. And for any of you listening, make sure you understand we're talking about the extended editions in all of these podcasts, because that is the official only one.
Yeah, the only edition
that exists. Yeah. So yeah, it really is something interesting about these movies, how they sort of create community. And it's cool how we've got these sort of similar stories. It's one of those things, like I always say, that film does that I love is, you know, we can share these sort of similar stories and have similar experiences around, you know, around these movies before long before we knew each other. Mm-hmm. So kind of in that same vein, aside from the fact that we have personal connections to them, why do you think Fellowship, and I guess really the series as a whole even, has stuck with us for nearly 15 years? It'll be 15 years this year that Fellowship was released in theaters. What makes it so iconic?
Well, I'd say it starts with its iconicness, with the fact that it's based on books that have been around much longer. And I don't know if you wrote down or have it in your notes when Tolkien came out with these actual books, but, you know, like they've obviously been around much longer. And I think the fact that like our parents, and possibly depending on how old you are, your parents' parents had a chance to grow up with some of these books. And then an entire generation gets to consume them, and then we get to consume them because they're being handed down to us. Like I said, again, much like your father and you, Laura's family, things like that. So it's already part of culture. You know, it's something that we're familiar with. It's not a story that just came out last year. People haven't had time to read the book, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't even think they would have been around that long, but we love story. Like, human beings love story. It's, you know, it's the crux for what this podcast and the Real World Theology podcast is based on, that we're made for story. And when it comes to story, like this Lord of the Rings arc especially is a truly great story. Like, it's both big and small, like epic and personal. You know, like Tolkien covers it all. And then Jackson, following it up, does a great job of transitioning that to the screen. You know, there's little tweaks here and there. And at least in the original trilogy, and especially in Fellowship, there's nothing grievously different that you couldn't do without or wasn't shortened for time that you're like, oh, the book was so much better. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the book's probably a little bit better, but it's one of the few times that, like, I don't think you can definitively say that. So you have a great story. You have great characters. We love great characters. You know, Fellowship introduces us to a ton of great characters. It's one of the few franchises that I say, like, who's your favorite? You know, and I expect people to be able to pick anybody, you know, and it wouldn't, almost anybody, and it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. You know, like there's the obvious answers, and you know, you get the majority of people who are like, oh, I love Gandalf or I love Aragorn, but like, who doesn't love Sam? Like, who doesn't love Eowyn? Who doesn't have a favorite between Legolas and Gimli? You know, like, all these characters are compelling and interesting. You add to that the fact that the music is amazing, and I rarely, I'm just one of the people that I typically don't really notice a lot of the music in film. Sadly, I wish I did.
Yeah.
But I can't not notice the music in this film.
Yeah, Shannon and I were talking about that last night. It's perfect in every instance.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it's fading in, it's like, you know.
Wait, could you do that again? I didn't catch that.
It's so it's just great. So you add to that, like, at the time, what I, you know, a great special effects, great world building, you know, groundbreaking stuff at the time. You know, Andy Serkis, this is where the world basically gets introduced to Andy Serkis and his, you know, motion capture genius as Gollum. Yeah. Not just having him, you know, computer animated completely, but having a real actor give you a lot of that. So technically, I get why this is compelling. I get why this is sticking around. But I think, and to be long-winded about it, I think most importantly, there's another section to it. There's a slew of things that connect with us as human beings, like love, like in all its forms. Like, usually movies focus on one type of love, and that's all you get. But whether it's romantic, whether it's friendship, whether it's sacrificial, like, Fellowship itself is full of people, like, willing to lay down their life for a greater cause or a person that they care about. Not only that, but the person who leads, I mean, Frodo, he's often thought of as the least of these.
Yeah.
It's like, it's literally an upside down world that I think people want to gravitate towards. I mean, I think they do that whether they know it or not, because it resembles the kingdom. Like, the most unextraordinary person is tasked with the most extraordinary thing to do. And the best part is that our hero, one of them, because I love it's a world with multiple heroes, is there's humility there. Frodo, like, often says, and it really struck me when I was watching the movie again, that he keeps saying that he doesn't want the power.
Yeah.
And he's never wanted it. You know, he keeps offering to give it to everybody.
Yeah.
And so in a world that craves more power, you know, our world in particular, but like in the world of Lord of the Rings, in Middle Earth, people are looking for power to be, I mean, for usually noble reasons, for safety, for comfort, to save someone they love. It reminds us that we don't get to choose much of what we experience in life.
There's this really powerful idea that you've got to, I mean, doing the right thing is something that you've got to do even when you don't want to. Because I think when we talk about Fellowship of the Ring, or when we talk about the series as a whole, you know, we say, oh, it's about this hobbit named Frodo who goes on a journey with a bunch of his friends to destroy this ring in Mount Doom. We forget about the part that he was supposed to just get the ring to Rivendell originally.
Yeah.
And that was the end of his journey. But he steps up at the Council of Elrond and says, I'm going to do this because I don't think anyone else can, or I don't think anyone else wants to, right? He somehow finds the resolve to do the exact thing that he doesn't want to do, but it's the thing that he knows has to be done.
Mm-hmm. When he's the only one that can do it, right?
Yeah.
He's the only person there, like hobbits, a race of incredibly unextraordinary people. You know, like the entire preamble of the Fellowship of the Ring is describing how hobbits are pretty unexceptional. They like to drink and they like to smoke and they like second breakfast.
Yep.
You know, that's their thing. They just want to live and be happy. They want to be content. They want to bother other people. They don't want power. I mean, there's like a little bit of family infighting between, you know, hobbits that you're going to see anywhere, but like they're not trying to invade the nearest territory. They just want to eat, drink, and be merry.
Right.
But to eat, drink, and be merry, like at some point Frodo realizes that someone else has to stand up for that. And there's always something bigger.
Yeah. And he says when he's at the House of Elrond, I love that scene where I believe he's talking to Gandalf and he says, you know, I used to just want to be able to get out of the Shire and go and have adventures. And now I miss the Shire more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's just some great ideas there. You know, we all struggle with that. Like, that's one of the reasons this thing is so great. It has characters that we can all relate to and situations we can all relate to. I mean, we've all been like Frodo before, where we're just discontent. We think the grass is greener on the other side. We want to be out somewhere doing something different from where, from, you know, what we're doing now. And, I think Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring captures in a beautiful way, just the simplicity of contentment.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I was going to say that definitely resembles, I think, a lot of people's lives. The more our culture moves towards get more done, get more done, get more done, succeed, achieve, get more power, get more power, get more power, we become very discontent being able to just sit with some friends and, you know, have a pint and enjoy life. It seems like a waste of time. It's not productive, but it's not until you can take a step back from that or you get out of that routine that you realize how valuable that time is.
Yeah.
And there's a time. And I think that's the beautiful thing too, because I don't think Tolkien or Jackson or, you know, Fellowship of the Ring in general is saying that one is necessarily better than the other.
Right.
Because I think he's definitely saying there's a time to rest and enjoy life and enjoy the fruits and the family and a pipe or whatever. But at some point, no matter how, like I said, I keep using the phrase unextraordinary because I feel like that's the phrase that was pushed on me during the beginning of this film. No matter how unextraordinary you are, sometimes extraordinary things need to be done. And that can be done by anyone with the right spirit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think another reason that this movie and this world has such staying power, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, is because of the world building that's done by both J.R.R. Tolkien in the novels and Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for better or for worse, whatever we think of The Hobbit trilogy, hint, hint, it's not good. whatever we think of that, whatever we think of some of the other things that Peter Jackson has done, he knows how to build a world that is interesting and epic in scope, but grounded in very real, very compassionate, empathetic characters. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I love the most about Fellowship of the Ring and Lord of the Rings as a series is it really is a massive world and it feels like a fully functioning world.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly does in the books to an even greater extent than in the films. But even in the films, we get the idea that there are all these different cultures. You know, you've got hobbits, you've got elves, you've got dwarves, and they've got their own unique and rich histories. And it could just be me. I don't think it is, but that's just something I love in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on Real World Theology's Star Wars episode, I talk about that, how I just love, I find the politics of Star Wars fascinating. I find the fact that every character has a backstory amazing mm-hmm. and interesting. And that's just something I love in a movie. And I think Lord of the Rings, certainly in its book form, sort of established that tradition of having high fantasy or you know, works that mm-hmm. that create a huge, fully functioning world. And I love that.
Yeah. It's okay to take, you know, 10 pages to describe something if it's going to give all of your characters more cause or more depth or, you know, more to lose, basically. You know, it raises the stakes. And I think Tolkien, not always, but on the whole, does that. And I think because Jackson needed to kind of trim down some of these movies, he had to kind of pick and choose the best parts to put forward.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't put everything in there.
Right.
Because, again, it's not the Hobbit trilogy. Like, this is trying to get through three books in three movies, which is very hard. And so some of those things were left out, and you could only focus on the things that really gave depth to character. And and going back to what you said about how the world seems to be developed so well, I think that's because, like you said at the beginning, it's because it was unprecedented that they filmed all three movies at the same time. So you didn't have actors coming back, obviously older or a little heavier.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you didn't have to recreate some of the scenes and something was a little bit off. You still have, you know, you already have all the things, all the props built, all the sound stages built. Well, actually, not really sound stages in that case, but like all the places where they shot, whatever that's called, locations,
yeah,
you know, set, and then had to tear it down and rebuild it. So it did feel like one long continuous thing, which is actually kind of funny because it's so culturally prevalent, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, that I remember one of my favorite stories, and it's the go-to sarcastic comment I make anytime I'm watching a movie where there's a part two, is, oh, the first time I watched the Fellowship of the Ring in the theater, as soon as it goes to black at the end,
yeah,
when you know, Frodo and Sam are kind of like making their way to Mordor,
yeah,
like there were actually people beside me who were like, what?
Yeah.
Why is it over?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, that's a dumb way to end a movie. Like, we don't even know what happens. And I'm like, how could you not know that there's more movies coming out? Like, anyway.
Yeah, that's pet peeve. Wild.
So every time people, like, don't stay for, like a end credit at a Marvel film or something like that, I'm like,
yeah.
What?
Exactly. Yeah. That's funny. I remember a lot of groaning, like, you know, now we've got to wait.
Got to wait a year.
Yeah. Did we have to wait a whole year? Yeah. I remember a lot of groaning about
well, that's
that.
Why, that's why they're really great, because they teach us patience.
Yeah, exactly. job he does with this mm-hmm. role. Like he is Gandalf. I mean,
oh yeah.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah. The entire time. Well, and that's the thing. So many characters are so themselves. And sadly, I would say that Frodo is probably one of the characters that doesn't strike me as Frodo the entire time.
Yeah.
But, you know, Merry and Pippin are always Merry and Pippin.
Right.
You know, Aragorn or Viggo Mortensen is always Aragorn. He's always this character. I mean, Liv Tyler basically always was an elf, so it kind of doesn't count. But, you know.
So I want to ask you one more question before we kind of close out for today.
Okay.
A lot of times you can hear you see some criticism leveled at Fellowship of the Ring and at the series as a whole, that it's basically a bunch of movies about walking. what do we say to that? Is there too much walking? Is the walking significant? What do we make of all the walking in Fellowship of the Ring?
I feel like it's one of those motivational posters. It's like sometimes it's not about the destination, it's the journey or something like that. And in Fellowship of the Ring, it's about the journey. It's about who they meet on the way. It's about what they learn about the world. If they just showed up on the doorstep, they would not have learned anything. They would have been the hobbits that left the Shire. I mean, think about what Merry and Pippin change from stealing stuff. I guess presumably from Tom Bombadil. No, it was some other farmer, wasn't it?
Oh, Farmer Maggot.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because Tom Bombadil's not in the movies.
Is he not? I thought he was the one where the riders show up, and they're like, Shire. And he's like, oh, no Baggins is here. I thought that was supposed to be Tom Bombadil.
I don't know. I don't know. I guess it could be Bombadil's character. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, to IMDb later.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, they're just like basically thieves and hooligans. And then they're jumping on a cave troll because their friend is presumably dead. Like that's the journey. So people are tired of walking. I could probably watch like a half hour of just like if someone YouTube edited this, and was just like, these are all like the panoramic shots from like Fellowship of the Ring, where it's just like helicopter panoramics of them like running or something. Not as much as like Two Towers, but
yeah,
just like these beautiful landscapes. And I think if you don't have those things there, you don't understand the world that they're living in. And if you don't appreciate the world that they're living in, you don't care about the characters. If you don't care about the characters, you're not watching the movie. So, you know, a big thumbs down on people who complain about that.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And it's shot in New Zealand. I mean,
yeah.
You're telling me you don't want to show off a little bit of New Zealand because it's absolutely gorgeous.
That's right.
There's actually a great video. I will try to get the link and put it in the show notes. I can't remember who it's by, so I can't credit. But it came out around the time one of the Hobbit movies, one of the million Hobbit movies came out. And it's basically a video essay trying to explain why are the Hobbit movies so terrible when when Lord of the Rings was so good. And what it basically explains is that anytime you have sort of one of those epic sort of travel sequences with them walking, or you have an amazing action sequence, they're always in Lord of the Rings and in Fellowship of the Ring, those moments are always grounded with very personal, intimate shots of the characters and their reactions and their experiences. So every time we see something epic and grand, it's grounded in something very personal and intimate, like you said earlier. And that's something that the Hobbit movies didn't do quite as well. So, I mean, I think, like you said, these big, epic, grand moments that, you know, kind of look like a travelogue at times, are actually very integral to the story and helping us even understand who the characters are, and certainly helping us identify with them as travelers on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up the idea of a journey. I think that's really timely, because I want to ask you, you know, we talked a lot when we were talking about making or creating Real World Rewind, what movies should we do first? How should we start this off? And we decided on doing the Lord of the Rings trilogy for a very specific reason. Why are these movies, a good set of films to start off a new podcast with? What about them makes them, you know, an appropriate starting place?
Well, I'll say two things, real quick. So we recorded episode 00, and we talked about on that episode that we're doing this podcast, or you're doing this podcast rather, in large part because it was basically something people kept asking us for. So we're doing Real World Rewind as a under part of Real World Theology because listeners wanted us to. So when we look back at the most popular episodes of Real World Theology, even though we think they're terrible, they're not very good movies. The Hobbit films were probably our most popular podcast.
Huh.
And so obviously people love this world and they want people to talk about this world and they want to listen, they want to engage, they want to add to that conversation. So that seemed like a great place to start. Secondly, hopefully, talking about these films will set a tone for this podcast that is comparably epic to the epicness of these films. People will come to it. They will enjoy the character of Blaine. They will enjoy his backstory. They will enjoy the journey he goes on. As we, you know, we seek to have more conversations, have more amazing conversations about film, despite however many trolls and orcs try to stop us.
Exactly. I love that. I want to give you a little bit of a preview of what's coming up. As you can probably guess, we're going to have our next show will be on The Two Towers, and we'll have a guest that has never been on this show before, which that's a really easy thing to say when it's just been me and Mikey for the first two shows. But I still get to say it. We're going to have a brand new mystery guest for The Two Towers. And so you want to tune into that on the next show. And we want to give you a chance to get in contact with us via social media, interact with us, tell us what you think of the show, what you like about it, what you hate about it. Just chat with us about movies. So, Mikey, where can we find you on social media?
The best way to have conversations with me on the internet is either following me on Twitter at Physification, following the show at Real World Theo, the Real World Theology show at Real World Theo, or joining the Real World Theology discussion group on Facebook. If you comment there, there's a good chance that I will not only see it, but I will respond and we can start that conversation. So please do find me there.
follow him and talk with him. You can find me on Twitter at DEPT underscore of underscore tourism. Someday I'm going to tell you the story of how I came up with that name. If you think you know where I got that that name from, you should tweet it to me, and I'll tell you if you're right. That's a story for another day. So that wraps us up for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!